Hi everyone, I'm Annie and I'm an addict. That was nice, wasn't it? That was nice. This is my home group, and so it's really nice to be able to do a share here. This was planned for my birthday last year, and in November I turned 18, and I was going to do the share then, and my dad got very sick, and I had to fly back to Australia sort of super duper fast. And so I got a call in the morning, and I was in Australia within, you know, about 36 hours. And I was in a meeting at home in Australia, and it was mid-January, and my dad was getting better at that point, and they were doing the key rings, and I realised that I hadn't picked up my key ring, so it was really nice. So I picked it up in Australia, you know, and that's where I started this journey of recovery in 1991, when I first came in. To sort of tell you what it was like, I'll do it in 10-year blocks. It's the easiest for me now. I can't remember it all in one go, you know, but 10 years I can sort of squash it in and think, oh yeah, I did that and then I did that and whatever, you know, because the next time there's a zero on the end of my birthdays, I will be 70, you know, so... I haven't got to 65 yet, you know, 63 in a few weeks. So, I'm well pickled, that's what it is, you know. Amphetamine sort of embalmed. So, you see, if you take a lot of speed, that's what happens. You stay young. Not as I would have suggested to anyone here. If you haven't done it, don't do it. It's shit. But I did love gutter drugs, I must say. I really liked them. But that wasn't my hopes and dreams of my young life, wasn't to become, you know, a mainline shooting addict. I was brought up in a little village in Chichester, in Sussex, near Chichester. Very middle class, Enid Blyton, Brownie, church choir, nice school, lots of land on the South Downs, you know, idealistic in the 50s, which was, you know, a lovely time, which none of you know about at all. You've only read about in your history books. but it was a very nice time, you know, post-war, and I think everyone was... It was just... Each decade has been different, you know. When you've lived a few of them, you can sort of, you know, elaborate on the different ones, which we all can. You know, everyone's more than 20 in here, I should think, anyway. So, and then when I was 12, in 1959, my parents decided to emigrate to Australia. And so we, my brother and I, and he was 9, and we went on a big ship for 6 weeks and landed in Australia, out to the colonies. And it was December, and it was very, very hot. And I always remember pulling into Port Melbourne because there's all palm trees all along the road there, and it was just, like, so different from you know, what I'd experienced. I'd never been abroad in my life, you know, and at that point, and it was just, you know, beautiful, you know, but sort of a bit scary for me because I'd established myself in secondary school and, you know, had friends in the village and different things, and you know, I think, you know, at a kid that age, doesn't matter whether you've got, you know, the mixed wiring that I have or not, you're still going to feel, you know, a little bit different, I guess. I don't know, I've never really met anyone that's had that exact experience as what I had, so I've never been able to sort of get a benchmark from anyone else. But anyway, it was interesting. I didn't want to go, I know that much, I didn't want to go, but it was interesting in the sense of sort of having to change tack a little bit. And the first day we were there, there was a family party. My dad's brothers and sisters had already emigrated, there's 6 of them, and everyone ended up out there. And there was a party, and my brother, myself, my cousin, we got really, really drunk And my brother was only nine then, and we were drinking all the slops and, you know, all the bits you can get. You know how it goes. I think most of us have had a little go at that at some time. And I was really sick, and everyone was sort of running around worrying about, you know, what has she done? What has she taken? You know, and all that sort of stuff. And I don't think my brother and my cousin were, you know, I don't know whether they were, we've never really talked about it, but, you know, this is just my memory of that day. And within a few weeks, I sort of had this sort of hankering to have some more alcohol, and there was some beer in the fridge, and, you know, like, I'm not even 13 years old, and I took the beer and drank it. And I got into real trouble, you know, for drinking this beer. And I couldn't understand what all the fuss was about. I just thought it was a drink in the fridge. But, of course, it was an adult drink. You know, I wasn't supposed to drink it. It was bloody hot out there, you know. And I was probably starting to tune in that, you know, you have a Foster's when it's hot. I don't know. You know, they're subliminal, aren't they, those ads? Maybe they get to you. But, you know, it wasn't very long before I realised that, you know, alcohol sort of did it for me, and I liked that feeling. And, you know, my life sort of took off in a sort of addict way, really, an addict way. You know, I did stuff that was probably different in a way. You know, I had a child when I was 15, and I'm a survivor of the Magdalena sisters, and of course my child was taken away from me because that's what happened. And I did a lot of laundry because that's what you do too while you're carrying these children that they take away from you in the end. And after I'd had Kathy, and who I have a great relationship with now, you know, so that has a happy ending. So don't be all out there thinking, oh, that poor lady. My daughter was 47. In December, and I was in Australia, and I spent the first birthday ever with her from the time, you know, from the night she was born to this time, and it was really nice. We went out for lunch together and dinner, and I saw my grandkids, and yeah, so it all has a happy ending, you know, something that I never believed would happen, because in those days when you gave up children, that was it, that, you know, you never had contact again. And you didn't have choices like you do today. And I must say, in the early 70s, I marched for the rights for women to keep their children. So, yeah, there's a lot of history around that too. So I had Kathy when I was 15. And by the time I was 16, I was in Sydney, and I was dancing in clubs. And this skinny little kid with big tits, so that was the advantage, really, you know. So when you get to 63, you can say what you like, you know. It's really good. So they can either say you're senile or whatever, I don't care. So, you know, this is the fact. This is the facts of life. And I was introduced then to my first lot of amphetamines, and it was in pill form in those days. It was the truck drivers used to take it to keep awake, and skinny little 16-year-olds like me, you took it, started to take it too, you know, and it was, and I really liked it. And there was a new drink out then called Bacardi as well. and Coke, yeah, Bacardi and Coke was the in drink. It's the most disgusting drink, isn't it, really? I mean, it's been a long time since it's passed my lips, but I remember it being like, it's like Terps or something, you know. It's really meth, because I've drank both of them anyway, so I can put them into that bracket, you know. And around about the same time, I was introduced to life on merchant ships, merchant sailing ships. And so that was the party place, you know. When the ships came in to port, we would go on board, and they were mainly British guys on the ships, and you know, it was the 60s, and all the Liverpool guys used to have really snappy suits on, and you know, music was good, and we were all really young. Some of these boys were only 16, 17, you know, their first trips to sea, We used to have the mess room. They were all done up as bars and everyone would go there and drink. And then, you know, you had a pick of lots of gorgeous men. And, yeah, it was so good, you know. And I really loved it. And I loved it so much I ended up marrying one of them. And it was like Pat said, he thought that he would be better if he got married. And my thing was the same. Because this guy had offered to marry me or wanted to marry me, and he came from Northern Ireland, and he was coming out to Australia to live, and we got married, and I figured that, you know, this would stop me being a slut, basically, round on the ships. And you know, and I'd been introduced to lots of other drugs by then. We used to smoke that Panama Red, you know, that was just out, and... you know, my life was sort of getting a bit crazy, you know. And I'm all of 20 years old by this stage. I've been to prison by then too, I forgot about that. You know, the first time I went to the Nick was for stowing away on a ship because you weren't allowed to do it. And I was somewhere out in the Atlantic when I got nicked, and they used to bring you back on another ship and you'd have to get on the tug and then they'd take you to court. And I'd been on speed all night and I couldn't talk in the court. I was going, "Oh, yes, Your Honour." You know, like when you've been talking for days, you know, you can't talk anymore. And so that was my first experience of being in the Nick, 40 days in the slammer for being a stowaway on a ship. And I bet no one else has got that story, have they? And yeah, so anyway, yeah, I married Jimmy Jackson, and we had a daughter, my daughter Mandy, who's now she'll be 40 next year. He'll be 70 and she'll be 40. God, the years have rolled by. And the marriage was volatile, it was violent and it was mad, but we loved each other passionately, but it was just destroy, you know. I was the most gobby bitch of all times, and he was used to, you know, he was violent, and I would never give in, ever. If you hit me, I'd say, "You fucking hit me again," you know, just wouldn't shut up. So I can see my side of it now, you know. I was the victim in the old days, but I can see now that, you know, like I was pretty fiery and pretty nutty. So that marriage ended, and in the meantime, well, at the same time, parallel with that, I'd always knocked around in bike clubs as well, because my brother rode, and, you know, different people that I knew and stuff from school or just sort of being around, and I'd always been around the clubs as well, and I married someone else, and he was from one of the outlaw clubs, and so it was the same sort of thing over again, similar life, you know, a bit sort of different. It's a bit different, I suppose, than the normal 9-to-5 life. It wasn't particularly different for me, because I'd always lived in sort of alternative, what they call alternative now. I mean, it wasn't alternative for me, it was just normal. But I have heard that word said, you know, it's an alternative lifestyle, maybe because we don't, not conformists, you know. And but that marriage, you know, I had a son in that marriage, and that ended the same as the one before. And my husband from that marriage, he died of this illness just after I came to England. But all the time, you know, my drug use is progressing. Still really, which I call really, I wasn't using socially, but they were more socially acceptable drugs. If amphetamines comes under that, you know. I never thought about amphetamine being a drug because it was manufactured in my bath, you know. I never really thought that it was and me dope grew in me garden, so I just didn't really think of it being illicit in a lot of ways, you know. If it's there in your house, it's just there, isn't it? You know, it's just part of. And, you know, I had friends that used heroin, and I was always a bit wary of it. I was a bit, you know, I used to see them drop a lot more than what I did, and different things would happen, and they were always in and out of rehab, and different stuff was happening, and I was a bit wary of it. But, you know, the inevitable happened, of course, and, you know, I did start using it, but it was not the biggest thing on my list. It wasn't. I used to like it for breakfast, actually, you know. You know, one of those greasy McDonald breakfasts and a hit of Smack sort of gets you peaceful for the day, you know. It was one of those. I was a bit of a Judy Garland user, really, you know. Fast ones at night and slow ones in the morning. And at this point, I'd like to say it doesn't really matter what you use. It doesn't really matter. This is just my story, you know, just for identification. It really doesn't matter which drug you use. It's what happens to you when you use it and, you know, where you end up because of using any substance at all and the lifestyles as well. I really think that, you know, we're more exposed to different lifestyles if we're using than what we probably live now, you know, in our clean lives. So all the package is the destroying factor, you know, all the things together. So, you know, don't think, oh, well, you know, I didn't use those drugs or whatever, because everyone's story is different on how, when and why, really. But it boils down to the same thing that we end up here. And, the second time I was in prison, now this one will get you, was for vagrancy. Now, does anyone know? No one would even know what vagrancy is. That is not having visible means of support. That means you haven't got a job. No dole in them days. You had a job or you went to the nick if you got caught. That's how it was, you know. And so I did 7 days for not having a job, because they know you're up to no good if you haven't got a job. They figure. I was just hanging out. I wasn't really thinking about anything particularly. And a couple of mates of mine got nicked, and I was in the company, so that was it. I got nicked as well. So things have moved on slightly since those days. Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, really? I sound like one of them old girls there, before the war. But I wasn't actually born before the war. I was born at the end of it. The war. That one. Number two. War. Yeah. Anyway, the fateful day came when I had had enough. And I went to my first meeting. And it seems like a million years ago, and it seems like yesterday. The million years ago are the fact that how much I've been able to change and do different things and involve myself in a life that's been completely different to the life I had when I was using. And the yesterday is that it's gone so fast that, you know, you figure, wow, what happened, you know? I always thought that being clean would be boring. And I found completely the opposite, that it's not boring at all. You know, when you're first around, it's boring. It is, because you're counting the minutes, you know, because the compulsion is there to use, and the obsession and not knowing what you're going to do next, and the fear and all that stuff that goes on in our heads when we first come around, because we're counting the seconds, really. But then after a while, life became very different for me. You know, I got involved in... I got involved in my home group to start with, which was a little bush home group of the mothership. That's where I started off, and I was moulded into something a little different. They made me treasurer straight away because there wasn't anyone. There weren't any other women. We had to travel great distances, and I don't mean from here to where I live in Shoreditch. I'm talking hundreds of kilometres. To meet up with other people, to have meetings. We had meetings at kitchen tables. We had meetings in cars. We've had meetings on the beach, wherever. If you get two people suffering from this illness and stick them together, that's a meeting, you know, and I really learnt that in Australia. And I think we know it here as well. It's just that maybe it's not voiced so much. You know, if you meet another member for coffee, that's a meeting in its own way, you know. It's sharing. It's two addicts sharing and over a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, and sharing how they feel. for that time. And, you know, when we walk away from that, we always feel better, or I always do anyway. I always think, wow, why didn't I think of that, you know? And that could be from a newcomer, that could be from one of my sponsees, or my sponsor, of course, and, you know, one of the guys, or just, you know, being open to listen to and hear what other people, how they're dealing with it. Yeah, so that's where I started off my recovery, and I had a sponsor then who came from Lafayette in New Orleans, and Gary and he are sponsee brothers now, which is pretty amazing all these years later and the whole journey that's gone on. And yeah, his sponsor is John S. is sponsored by the same guy as you, isn't he, Gary? And it's just like, who would have thought? Who would have thought all these years and countries later? But that's the connection of this fellowship, you know, and people who are in 12-step program. Yeah, so that was my first. And then I moved to a beautiful place called Phillip Island, and it's off the south coast of Australia, and it's idealistic. It's got all surf beaches and palm trees and lots of yummy surfers in the beach and on the beach, and I lived there for a while, and I decided that I needed to travel again. You know, I wanted to come back here and you know, revisit my roots, and I ended up in bloody Hackney with nothing to do here. The South Downs of Sussex. My dad took us out there so we wouldn't end up in the council estate. I'd never been on one in my life, and I come back and I'm living on a huge council estate now, which I love. I love Hackney. It's just it's the bee's knees. I love it. It's alternative, I suppose. You know, there's lots of diverse people and, you know, lots of fun. Anyway, when I came back, I was able to get involved in NA and go to meetings. And I must say, at that time, and Frankie was around in those days, the meetings were very different than what they are now. You know, the fellowship was still... there was still a lot of madness. And I don't think program was sort of high on the agenda as much as it is now, you know. And I've seen the fellowship grow strength by strength of sponsorship and service and people staying put. And, you know, it's really, really strong now. And, you know, I'm glad that I was part of that growth here. That's not to denounce what was happening in NA before 96 when I came over, because there's a lot of people who have got a lot of clean time here too. And, you know, but I found it very difficult anyway. So this is probably just my personal point of view at that time. And, but, you know, I've hung in there and for my own recovery, because I had a lot to learn. And, you know, it was strange for me, I suppose, you know, being in another place and whatever. But, yeah, and I've had, you know, two long-term sponsors here, and I'm currently going through the steps again. When I say again, that's sort of... still, I should say, really, because they're a continuous thing for me, really. You know, I do them and then I do them again. And having, you know, step 12 is really important to me, because I've been fortunate enough to have been through the 12 steps. That step 12 is really important in the sense of sponsorship, service, and carrying the message, which... is the gift that is given to us when we arrive here, that if we, you know, do the program and stay with it, that the gift is that we're able to carry the message. We can from day one carry the message, because if you have one day, you have more than someone that has half a day. And even someone that's got 4 days or 4 years, you're still carrying the message to them in the fact that you're here. So I always think that's important to embrace that and know the relevance of being in recovery because it's important stuff. You know, we're given another chance, and to embrace our recovery, I think, is, you know, very valid. If you're feeling down, just remember where you've been. You know, that's what was said to me. And today I feel like I'm sort of in my body at last. You know, I'm earthed more. And that is because I have a place. You know, I'm not looking for a place anymore. I have a place in my heart and in my soul. And it's, you know, that doesn't matter where I live, or it's because I'm part of what's going on here. And I mean, in the room tonight, we were laughing before, this girl's from my coven. I'm pagan, so you know, I do belong to a coven, so I was just throwing that out to my sponsees and their sponsees. And you know, it's really, really nice, because that connection is so important, and that's happened by all of us saying, I don't want to use anymore, one day at a time. You know, I've had enough of this, and we make another journey for ourselves. My relationships are completely different now than what they were when I was using, because they are real now, and they're not conditional. You know, I'm not with someone today in a relationship because I want to escape from something else. You know, I'm in a relationship because I care about the person I'm in the relationship with. And, yeah, my relationship with my children is very different as well, you know. I always thought that I wasn't such a bad mum because my kids were always with me. But, you know, we live like gypsies, and I don't mean that as a derogative word if anyone's a gypsy in here, you know. We were travellers, and you know, it was a pretty bizarre life for the kids. But they've said to me since, you know, they're grown up now. And my son actually travels all the time. He's in Holland working at the moment, but he was in Berlin a couple of weeks ago, and I got a text from him. He was in Rotterdam. He was having dinner at the port of Rotterdam, and you know, he's like I was, you know, looking for other horizons, and he's had his time of having to address some of his stuff as well. And but he seems content with what he's doing, and he's happy, and maybe he's just that he's an indigo child and needs to be moving on, and that's fine too. But as I say, I think it's in your heart if you find your place of where you're to be. And I guess having the connection in the fellowship has taught me of responsibility to other people, and about caring, and caring for myself and caring for others. That, you know, when I walk in this room on a Friday night, you know, the vibration is pretty buzzy, but, you know, it's, Frankie and I were talking about it before, but when, you know, you think, oh God, you know, it's going to be mad, and, you know, I'm on the committee still, you know, I do the tea here now, and, but it's just, it all settles, and you can just feel like one heartbeat in this room of everyone. You know, in that unity, and that comes from step 12, you know, of that spiritual awakening, and it's nice to feel that, you know, I belong, and I know you belong as well. And you know, we're right-sized people now, and you know, I choose to stay that way, and I believe that you do too, because you're here tonight like I am. And you know, we'll go off and do stuff over the weekend, but we'll be connected. You know, some of us will go to other meetings, some of us will be with family. You know, we'll all... Tomorrow, I'm in a community garden, an allotment garden, and Begonia's coming over tomorrow. One of my girls is coming over, and I love that because, you know, I love the spirit of nature, and you can dig around in the dirt, and I'm putting all my herbs in now, you know, so I can do all my spells. And... But I love the garden, you know, it's really cool. And then on Sunday I'm going for lunch with my partner to visit a good friend of mine who's in the fellowship and his partner, and we're going to have lunch together. Really simple stuff, but really joyous, you know. When I woke up this morning, I didn't have to work today, and I didn't get up till 11:30, and I was just having a little think about the weekend, and I thought, this is really nice. You know, I know what I'm going to do, where I'm going to be. I'm ready for any surprises. I'm always ready for them, you know, because they can pop up. But, you know, I'm just content with my life the way it is, of just doing stuff, you know. Professionally, I have the best job in the world, you know. I work as a nanny, and I must say the little buggers are wearing me down a bit the last couple of years, but I love being with the kids, you know. It's child's spirit time for me. And it's funny, you know, wherever I go, I was having coffee the other day, and these two kids just came and sat beside me, and their mums are going, "Oh, don't bother the lady." And they're just sitting there, and we started to chat, you know. I think I just communicate with two-year-olds really well. And, yeah, it's nice. And, yeah, life's good. So am I nearly finished now, Frankie? No, I've got more.
10 minutes.
Oh, my God. What'll I talk about? I've got a story that I know Gary always likes me to tell. The policeman one? Yeah. After you've been locked up a few times, cops are not your favourite person, are they? You sort of try, and I was dealing for years too, so you can sort of spot the bastards, can't you? You know when they're around. And you try and keep well out of their way, because you know they're going to pull you for something or other. Anyway, I was in early recovery, and I was doing prison service. Well, that's another thing I want to talk about, is Sunday, the link up. I'll talk about that in a minute, because that was amazing. But anyway, I had to go out, and it was a long way to visit this dude who was in the same group as me. He'd been sentenced to long, long time. So I was asked by my group, would I go and visit him, because I had a car. So I said, yeah. So I booked a motel, because it was about probably 300 k's away or something like that, and took Luke with my son, who was, I don't know, maybe 12, something like that, and said, come on, we'll go away for the weekend and I'll go and visit this dude out at the prison, a place called Ararat, which is right in central Victoria. And so we went out there, and I took all the literature and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And there was a meeting that was on about 50 k's away, and I said to Luke, I want to go to that meeting, you know. And there was, I forget the name of the film, but every kid that age went to see it, and it was on in the local flicks in this little country town. Every kid from miles around had gone to see it. It was like Ferris Bueller's Day Off or one of those sort of films. And so I dropped Luke off at the picture theatre, and I couldn't work out where this meeting was. And across the road there was the police station, and I walked in there voluntary. Right, first time ever in my life I've walked in one voluntary. You usually put your hands right up your back, haven't you, together, then pushing your head down. Memories. Anyway, I went in there and I said to this guy, this cop that was behind the counter, that I was looking for this meeting, and he said, oh, it's a long way from here, love, you know, I don't know if you'll get there by whatever time it was, 7:30 or whatever. And he said, but I know the guy and I know his wife, and I've got his wife's phone number here, because this is just a little bush town, you know. And he let me ring the woman, and she said, oh no, all the men have gone now to the meeting, you know, they left about an hour ago because it's a long way. And so I hung up the phone, and I thought, I sort of felt a bit, you know, I wanted a meeting. I wanted to talk to someone else, you know, that had this illness. And this cop said to me, could he have a chat to me? And we can go down the back. And I thought, oh, you know, you can hear the keys, can't you? And anyway, we went down the back, and he made us a cup of tea, and we started to talk. And he told me that he had a problem with a drug. And his wife did too, and he told me the story about how his 10-year-old son had been killed just about a year before, and you know, they were devastated by the loss of this boy. And I asked them, it was alcohol that was their drug of choice? And he said, yeah, they had always drank, but, you know, they'd certainly drank more. And anyway, we had this conversation about, you know, why I stopped and this and that and so on. And I left there and I felt better. I felt connected to someone else that had had this experience, you know, this lost experience. Now, I don't know what happened to that guy, you know, whether he got in the rooms or... And I didn't realise that I was 12-stepping this guy either, you know. I had no idea because it never entered, you know, what little knowledge I had of this program at that time. But it made me feel better. And I went to pick Luke up from the pictures and we were back at the motel and he said, oh, how was your meeting, Mum? And I said, it was really, really different, you know. It was really different. And the next day we had to go out to the prison again and I took a meeting out there and stuff and then drove back to Melbourne. But it was a pretty amazing experience, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that you can be anywhere at any time and there could be somebody that needs to hear what's going on, you know, that there is a different way of life. And coming back to prisons, last Sunday we had the link up with Holloway from the convention and I was so moved by it and there was a woman sitting a couple of seats up from me who... has done prison service like I have, and I know there's others in the room here now, women that do prison service, and it was just amazing that we could hear from those women. There was clean time. There was 5 years. Someone in Holloway was 5 years, and I remember taking the meeting in the detox, and no one was sort of any time at all, you know. And now we have a meeting on the landing in Holloway. And that's really amazing. When I come over in 96, there weren't any meetings in Holloway. You know, I remember going to see the governor. There was another thing, you know. I got roped in with the cops again and security again. This guy said to me, do you want to take a meeting? And I said, oh, yeah, just new to the country. He said, it's in Holloway. And I said, oh, yeah, no problem. I thought he meant on the Holloway Road. I had no idea it was in the big house. But anyway, I did it, you know, and it was great. And it kept me clean when I first came over. Every Friday I was in there and I'd walk back with the chair down Holloway Road and I'd go, Jesus, I don't want to use. I don't want to use if that's where it takes you. And it was amazing for me. I was only 4.5 years when I came over here, you know, little kid. In recovery and you know, in this big city, and I was running around all the clubs, dancing, all the alternative, all the torture garden and all the clubs, having a great old time, you know. Jeez. So naive I am, you know, so grown up but so naive, you know, but I didn't use. I danced a lot, but I didn't use, so, you know, I don't really suggest it to anyone, but anyway, it was a good time. So Holloway last week was very moving for me, and anybody in this room, if you get the opportunity to do prison service or any H&I service, go for it. You know, it's the best way to carry the message, because these people don't have any time at all and they really would like what we have. I know that from sitting in that detox, you know, all those years and stuff with other women. And I know the guys have got it sort of pretty sewn up, but there's, you know, it still needs more, you know. It still needs more. So always, if you hear of a H&I commitment, grab it, you know, and it will keep you clean. So, I'll wrap up now, Frankie, before you start waving cards at me and different things. So thanks for listening.